My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome into episode 11 of Best Dans in Baseball with Dan Buffa. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. We're recording this on the off day, Thursday, the 20th of August. The Cardinals just finished winning 2 out of 3 from the Giants in typical Cardinal fashion, which meant a whole lot of good pitching and a whole lot of not hitting. They're about to go on a West Coast swing, meaning some late nights for those that are trying to do the Twitter following thing, but you'll have a lot of mid-afternoon games on the weekend and things of that nature. Let's kick it off with how we have kicked off a lot of shows this year, and that is with another injury. Randall Grichuk goes down on Sunday. They put him on the DL because it's one of those kind of weird injuries because the Cardinals can't ever seem to have anything normal. Grichuk thinks he'll be back mid-September. Well, maybe early September, but it's sounding more like mid-September. How bad is this for the Cardinals?
You know, I wrote at KSDK that I wasn't really too worried about it because the Cardinals don't really rely on one man to really power their attack. But, you know, the more you hear about it, the more you think about, you know, the elbow strain, how it's such a tricky injury that you don't know when he's going to come back. He's being shut down right now. He's not doing anything. So, and to take, you know, a great throw ride of a bat like Randall Grichuk out of this lineup, it's going to hurt him. But also just kind of gives, you know, an opportunity to guys like Brandon Moss to finally prove themselves. It gives an opportunity for Steve Bisciotti to play all the time. And it was going to put Jason Hayward in center field until he had to go pull his hamstring, even though it seems to be just a cramp. But, you know, Grichuk being out, it does take a little bit of the lightning out of this lineup, and it makes him look really kind of a little pale, and I guess the way that I can spin it is that if you just got to hope that Matt Adams is going to come back soon and Holiday, and a lot of these guys are going to come back and pick up some of the slack. But right now, you can probably expect to see a lot of, like, more, you know, more 2-1 and 4-3 victories because the Cardinals, they just don't score a lot of runs with Randall in. And so if you take him out of it, it is a little scary, but the silver lining is that the Cardinals are built on starting pitching and great pitching overall. So I don't think the Grichuk injury is going to hurt him in the short term, but if he's out as we get into September and into, you know, late September, and if he's still kind of lingering, he is a guy that if he's gone for a long time, it may start to sting a little bit.
You know, you said that they're not powered by one guy, and that's somewhat true. Mainly because they're not powered at all. You know, I'm looking at the stats since the 1st of July, so that's, what, 6 weeks, you got the All-Star break in there, whatever. Matt Carpenter has 10 home runs, Randall Grichuk has 8. Then you go down to Peralta, and actually Mark Reynolds have 5 before you slack off to Hayward with 2, you know, 4 people with 2, a couple with 1. You know, much more than, well, right about half of the home runs that we've hit in the team has hit in the last month and a half have come from Matt Carpenter and Randall Grichuk. So losing his, even though just that potential thunder is a dangerous thing, especially when Hayward then, you know, pulls his hamstring, cramps his hamstring, whatever he did with it. And you know, we assume that he's going to start hitting tomorrow, or he's going to play tomorrow in San Diego, but the way he ran out his pinch hit last night, it kind of made you wonder. You know, again, it's a good thing that the pitching staff is historic levels because this is just a team that just can't find, whatever for whatever reason, cannot find that spark to get started.
They can't. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you think that we would have ran away with this division by now, and then you couple that with all the injuries, and then you think, okay, well, maybe we shouldn't be as good as we are. And you look at that, you know, in the last 30 days, I mean, Steve Bisciotti is your best hitter. He's got you know, 30 hits and 89 at bats. He's driving in runs. He's starting to hit for some more power. He almost had two home runs the other night. He was kind of robbed severely by Juan Perez. And, you know, and I guess you'd look, okay, well, you think about this team before Piscotty, and you imagine if Piscotty wasn't up by now and he hadn't given us that boost, and they'd really be ailing. And you know, I think it's a fair point. I mean, Grichuk being out, I mean, he takes away a power source, but in my eyes, I think the team just sneaks by, and they continue to do it as we are 20th of August here. They continue to do it on that great pitching. And I think as long as the pitching stays healthy, I think we'll be fine. But it wouldn't hurt if guys like Brandon Moss can kind of decide to give us anything. And Mark Reynolds could just all of a sudden explode. If Piscotty keeps hitting, you know, if Yadier Molina keeps up this little, you know, I want to be a power hitter kind of thing going on. He's got the last 2 weeks. But you kind of look up and down that roster, and at least until the reinforcements come in, maybe when, you know, when Scruggs gets up here and you get a couple extra power bats in the bench, because the other night, even when before Haywood was hurt, the Cardinals bench looked pretty bare. I mean, it was, I think, Cosma, Cruz, Borges, and, you know, I mean, extra guys that, you know, nobody's going to – it's not going to put a charge or a scare in any relief pitcher. So it does worry you a little bit, but as I've said the whole season, the Cardinals, they just seem to keep treading water until the next guy returns.
Yeah, and it's still kind of baffling, although maybe not entirely, but a little bit baffling. The Cardinals are still just going with 12 hitters and 13 pitchers. I know that, you know, there are a lot of good pitchers. I mean, they still got some solid arms in Memphis that can contribute. So it's not like they're, you know, carrying dead weight or anything, but you know, it would be helpful to have a guy like a Greg Garcia, you would think, to be able to let Colton Wong have a day off, which he hasn't had in over a month.
Oh yeah, 36 you know, games, I think.
Yeah, I mean, except for the off days that are built in, like today, he hadn't had any rest, and he's kind of showing it. We're seeing the bedraggled Wong and the bad part of his streakiness. It's been pretty ugly. In fact, looking at it, you know, I've still got this charts up of what happened since the beginning of July. Since the 1st of July, he's hitting .207. I mean, that's pretty ugly for a guy that we know we've seen him hit much, much better. But then, like you say, Brandon Moss, Mo brings him in, and I'm not sure what he was expecting. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a 167 average in 48 at-bats or 48 plate appearances. He's drawn a few walks lately. He's hit some balls into the outfield, but, you know, they're caught. You know, it's you know, it's difficult to see why Mo made that move. And I know there's lots of factors. I know that we may not even – it may even get some benefit out of it next year if that's the way they want to go. But right now, you know, Mo's not looking quite as infallible as he used to.
No, he's not. And, you know, I even kind of thought, you know, when he got Cishek and Broxton, you know, you kind of let Tui Velada down there. And I guess you're just trying to load up with the veterans. But, you know, the moves he made were tricky. I mean, and I think the relievers have worked out well. I mean, I think they've just allowed the guys in the Memphis to kind of keep retooling. But the Moss move was kind of like the big move he made. Maybe he was just saying, well, this I don't need to make a big move. And, you know, our bats are going to be fine. Then, you know, Holiday goes back and, you know, he loses Grichuk. You know, if Mozeliak had a crystal ball, I mean, he'd just be even smarter. And I don't – I mean – but it was the one trade he made, and it's going to draw criticism until Brandon Moss does something. I mean, he's in the last 30 games. I mean, last 30 games he's slugging 190, and that's just impossible. I mean you're approaching Tony Cruz levels there, and nobody wants to be that if you're a power hitter. And all we can do is lean on the fact that hey, once upon a time Brandon Moss hit 15 home runs, drove in 50 runs, and you know you saw him get the walk off hit at Busch, and you thought he was going to take off. And then in this last series this week, you saw him get a base hit. He drew a couple walks, and you thought, okay, you know, maybe he's gonna have a good series. And then you know the second game where he was facing I think Vogelsong, and Peralta was on second base, and I think he threw him a little flat curveball, and it was the first pitch, and Moss just popped it up. And right there, those are the type of bats that people are just going to get shake their heads at Brandon Moss. So when he just, you know, he just looks clueless to plate. His pitch recognition is something I've been talking about. He just doesn't really seem to recognize pitches. He seems to be guessing when balls kind of go by him. He's kind of hoping he's hoping they're not strikes. He doesn't really seem to understand the strike zone right now. He swings kind of wild. I know when he gets a hold of one, it might go out, but I mean, the more I keep hoping, I mean, I spent a couple days the other day defending Brandon Moss, saying, hey, you know, now a couple more injuries, just give him a chance. We don't have anybody else where he has to show up hopefully eventually and do something. And I'm not even expecting home runs from Brandon Moss. I would just like some hits, you know, some lengthy at bats. I mean, he's making Mark Reynolds look good right now. And a month ago, that wasn't a good thing.
No, it's difficult. And I still think Moss is probably pressing somewhat, still trying to prove that he needs to be here. But, you know, it comes a point where you got to either relax or you're not going to be able to prove that you need to be here either. I mean, you know, I'd hate to see Mo non-tender him at the end of the year because of what the Cardinals gave up in Comanche. But, you know, that's looking more and more likely, given that he just cannot seem to get started. And I mean, that's the thing. It wasn't like he was hitting in Cleveland and then stopped hitting when he came to St. Louis. He was struggling there as well. So, it does not give him a whole lot of grace period. And he's used up probably all that most fans want to give him. So,
yeah.
You know, we were talking on Twitter with somebody today, and you know, said maybe if he gets out to the West Coast and he's not in Busch Stadium, and you know, maybe he can get a little bit new perspective, get a couple hits, get things going. But you know, I think that's just right now. It's just wishful thinking.
It is, and it doesn't help that he's in a lineup that's really bad right now. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he's got the spotlight on him. I mean, if Holiday was in the lineup and Grichik was in the lineup and we were cranking home runs and scoring 6-7 runs a game, Brandon Moss would be about as recognizable as Pete Cosma, and it wouldn't be a big deal. But since those guys are gone, and you know, you have two guys drop this week, you lose Grichik on Sunday, and that's a loss. Then you lose Hayward for the series, and that's an even bigger loss. So then Hayward's not in center, Grichik's not in center, Moss is out there every day. Because Moss wasn't playing for a few days. I mean, Mark Reynolds was starting, and Moss was kind of getting a break, and he was pinch hitting. But now he's back out there, and the spotlight's on him. And when people see him, and he goes 0-for-4 with a couple strikeouts, all they see is the guy they lost. And the guy they lost is not going to be in the major leagues for 2 years. Maybe next year with Cleveland. It just depends. So, in a way, it doesn't even matter who we lost for him. It just matters that he's here, and he needs to hit, and he's not hitting. And in 42 at bats, he just hasn't, you know, he hasn't done what fans expect. I mean, he struck out 12 times. He's only got 7 hits. He's only got, I mean, the biggest part, he's only got 1 RBI. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and I know RBIs are kind of a stat you can kind of frown upon because it's all about getting the opportunity. Well, let me tell you, Brandon Moss has had the opportunity to drive in runs, and he just hasn't. I mean, if you look at his stat line and just start running through the numbers, you go, oh, 461, ooh, that's nice. No, that's his OPS in his last 30 games. And it's just bad. I mean, I try to search for positives. I mean, if I was Brandon Moss's DraftKings defense attorney for people that want to spend money and buy him for a day, I'm not sure where I could tell people they're going to, you know, use him for a day and see if they win some money. I can't give you any hope, as right now I'm looking for contact. I mean, it doesn't matter if he's playing Petco Park or Wrigley Field. Right now, Brandon Moss is a lost soul at the plate, and I think it is a good thing to get him out of Busch Stadium, because even if Petco Park isn't a hitter's ballpark, I do think that he needs to get away from that Cardinal crowd, get away from maybe the pressure, you know, something that may have maybe ate up Jason Hayward a little bit in his first month, maybe get out on the road. And, you know, it's too bad the Cardinals can't play in some American League parks, because Brandon Moss hit very well away from Cleveland in the American League. But unfortunately, you know, the Cardinals aren't going to play those teams anymore. We're going on the West Coast, and, you know, he has to hit, because whether the Cardinals fans like it or not, he's going to play. He's going to play every day.
Yeah, and, you know, the hitting is the biggest thing. I'm looking to, you know, sort that report by strikeouts, and Brandon Moss has 12 strikeouts in 48 plate appearances, which is a lot. I mean, that's every four. You know, plate appearance times he gets up there. But, you know, Randall Grichuk is doing it about 1 every 3 times he gets up there. So he has 50 strikeouts in that same time span. But Grichuk is hitting. I mean, when the times that he doesn't strike out, he does have some production. You can live with strikeouts when you get some other things to go along with it. Now, you talked about Moss being in the spotlight and being on the field. At least he's on the field, and that's something that Peter Borges can't say.
No.
You know, even with Grichuk going down, and even with Jason Hayward getting, you know, being out for a day or two, the guy still can't get on the field. I mean, they'd rather have Brandon Moss play left field than have Tommy Pham play over there and Borges play center. It seems kind of weird to see what lengths this team seems to go to not to play Peter Borges.
You know, it just seems like I write about almost everything. People always kind of tell me, are you ever not right? Well, I try to write about what people talk about, and that's something I kind of tackled yesterday. Like, what do the Cardinals see in Peter Borges? And people act like, and I said, you know, that the Peter Borges experience may be fading, but did it ever really get a chance to rise up in St. Louis? I mean, this is the guy that I saw at the winter warm-up in 2014 tell the press he was going to steal 40 bases in the 2014 season. And maybe after about 2 weeks, you know, when John Jay took over, that dream was gone. And ever since then, he's struggled to stay in the lineup and consistently. And all he really is right now is a pinch hitter, a late inning replacement. He's a guy that Matheny will put out there in a one-run game to go track down a fly ball. But, and, you know, we all know that his, you know, if you look at his career numbers as a hitter, they're not impressive. I mean, he hasn't, ever since he had that great 2011 season, and then he kind of bumped heads with Mike Trout out in L.A. in 2012, and he broke his wrist in 2013. Ever since that surgery, he has not been the same. He hasn't played 140 games in a season only once, and it's being hurt. And it's also being in St. Louis with a bunch of outfielders, and he just doesn't seem to gain the trust of Mike Matheny. I mean, he was brought here with Randall Grichuk, and the more we see these two guys develop, the more we see the player that was that player one was Mr. Grichuk. I mean, we see that he was the juice in that deal, and Peter Borges was the guy that maybe they thought he could give John Jay a run for his money. But even when this year, when John Jay goes down, Peter Borges doesn't go in. When Matt Holliday goes down, Borges doesn't go in, you know, and then Randall Grichuk goes down, and I thought he'd get out in one of these games against the Giants. He doesn't. Tommy Pham plays. And while I'm a Tommy Pham kind of guy, I don't think that he should be starting, you know, back-to-back days over Peter Borges just because, you know, he's not doing too much with the bat, and Peter Borges kind of needs to play. He needs to play a little bit. I think he's got a couple starts in August. I mean, he's got a scattered amount of at-bats, and yeah, he doesn't have a great bat, but that bat's not going to find any traction when he gets about one at-bat a game. If that, I mean, some days he's just kind of a defensive replacement. And it's just one of those things where I don't think he's ever going to become anything here. And it almost makes you wonder, Mozeliak couldn't find a fit for him in a trade. He couldn't just include him in something or just kind of maybe get some kind of draft pick or see if he could play somewhere else. It makes you wonder why they're holding on to him and how long they're going to hold on to him if they're going to do nothing with him but just be a late inning defensive replacement.
Well, to be fair, that's all they've got Pete Cosma for, too, so it's not unheard of. You know, you look at that. Borges has, you know, kind of sorted this report by plate appearances, and he's got the ninth most plate appearances for this team since the beginning of July. So, I mean, I guess it's not quite as bad. But then you look, and number 10 is Tommy Pham, and he's only 5 plate appearances less than Borges, and he spent 2 weeks in the minors or longer. Over that span, it's very strange to see, like you say, Borges hasn't done anything that makes him earn the time. There's no doubt mm-hmm. about that. But, you know, the argument has always been about those that are in favor of him is he needs the regular time to hit. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I mean, it could be that he just had one good year, and even if you give him run him out there. But the problem with needing a bunch of time to hit is that, you know, you need to be able to hit at least a little bit to be able to get the more playing time. And so far, that just hasn't happened. He's hitting 135 since the beginning of July. So, it's very strange to see them, you know, not strange to see them pull up Pham. And I can even see them starting him. But to then have a guy like Moss who's not hitting, and yes, you hope that he does. You hope that he gets this power. If he does, he's got more power. But he's not hitting. Why not at least play a better defensive lineman by Pham and Borges rather than running him out there twice?
And also, you know, give yourself some more speed. I mean, you put Pham and Borges out in left and center, and you got a little bit of an attack, you know, and maybe if you could teach Borges how to bunt or get hit by a pitch, he might get on base and be able to run the bases. I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, if Brandon Moss isn't going to be hitting, how many more games are you going to go out there? I mean, yes, you gave up Rob Kaminsky, and people are going to keep saying the people that want him to play will say that. And why I want the guy to do something too, I think you can mix in Peter Borges with a very, very bad hitting Brandon Moss right now. I think you can kind of mix him in. Tommy Pham, he will make the argument for Tommy Pham playing. It's fine. Tommy Pham is healthy. You might have to just kind of capitalize on that and see what he gives you over the course of a week or two. But Peter Borges, I just don't think there's any reason that he can't play right now, especially with Moss. I mean, trade him out. I mean, if you're going to have a guy like Moss who plays an average outfield, he doesn't have any bat right now. I mean, Peter Borges gets on base, you know, he's a weapon, you know, and he does give you a better defensive outfield. I mean, if you have Borges, Pham, and Biscotti out there, I mean, that's a very good outfield. I mean, that's an outfield that isn't going to allow a lot of mistakes. It's going to make a lot of catches, you know. I mean, Borges' arm is not the greatest, but he can run down anything. I mean, there are times where I think even Hayward can't run towards the wall on like a straight line like Peter Borges can. I mean, just when it comes to trucking on the fly ball, he's one of the best, if not the best, on this team. And it's just, especially with Hayward out, you have having him out there in the outfield, it just makes your pitching better. And if your team is powered by pitching, Peter Borges should not be on the bench every night. I mean, unless Moss is starting to rip it up, and especially if you're playing at very spacious Petco Park, I kind of want to see Borges out there. I mean, and look at last year. I'm a John Jay guy, so I'm not trying to. I'm not putting on a different suit here, people. I'm just recognizing that we have a lot of guys out, and there's no reason for Peter Borges to not play at all. I mean, he needs to. I mean, since the All-Star break, he's 2 for 23. I mean, I get that. He's got 7 strikeouts. He doesn't give you a lot, and you know, he probably isn't going to get a real chance here. But if you have a need in the outfield, and you have a guy in Moss who is not hitting and who isn't showing any signs of hitting. I mean, it isn't like Moss is cranking a home run, striking out 3 times, hitting a double. You know, he's popping up, he's grinding out, he's not doing much, and he's had the chances. He's had more bats than Borges. I mean, he's had his shot, and I'm not saying you completely sit down Brandon Moss because you want to keep playing him, because there is a deficiency out in the outfield, but you can definitely mix in Peter Borges and improve your defense and give you some more speed in the bases if he reaches base.
Borges has had 1 start in August. He had 1, 2, 3, 4. He had a number of starts in July and just couldn't get it done. But you know, it's just, you know, maybe it's the thing he's just said he's seen enough. But It's a little surprising, again, like we say, when we're focused so much on pitching. And that's what we've got. I mean, we've got very good pitching. We saw that again this week. We saw, you know, Jaime Garcia take a shutout into the 9th inning. We saw John Lackey make a bid for a complete game. We see Michael Walker be Michael Walker for the most part. You know, we had a couple of bumps in the road, but nothing significant, because I think the Lance Lynn game was on our last show. So, you know, it's, but you, again, you've got to be able to score a little bit. And I know that seems to be the focus, and hopefully they can scrape by enough. I mean, you know, every once in a while they'll get that, you know, game that the just things click and they score 6 or 7 runs. But
that's right.
Those games are farther between than they used to be. So let's see. Who else do we need to? Well, let's talk a little bit about the pitching. And let's talk about the fact that the Cardinals, again, we assume that they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. We don't know how. The Cardinals are just now 4.5 games up on Pittsburgh, which is insane for the fact that they have, what, 76 wins?
They have 77 wins. It's ridiculous.
77 wins. You know, they could easily – I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of what some people call the last great pennant race of before they went to the 3 divisions and had just the National League East, the National League West, and Atlanta and San Francisco I think maybe both of them won 100 games, you know, and one of them, you know, I think that was the year Atlanta won, maybe won that division, and San Francisco stayed home, but they had such, you know, had a ridiculous amount of wins, because that was before the last one before the wild card. It's almost getting to that point now where one of these teams is going to be probably the second or third best record in all of baseball, and they're going to be the wild card team, and has a chance to be then knocked out, you know, with one bad game. Hopefully that's not the Cardinals. But we'll talk some more about that. But assuming that they get to start with the NLDS and they don't have to worry about this one game playoff, we were talking a little bit about playoff rotation, who makes it, who doesn't. It's a difficult call right now to know, to leave one of these guys off the playoff rotation.
It is. It's one of those things where, you know, where I was talking about with Corey Rudd and Tara Wellman today, and it's like we're kind of running in circles. I mean, you don't want to leave Jaime Garcia off the roster if he's completely healthy, because, you know, in his 12 starts, he hasn't allowed more than 3 earned runs in any of them. And when he's healthy, he's dynamic. I mean, even when he's okay, he's still pretty good. Like last night, you know, 6 innings, 3 earned runs, you know, and that's just because, you know, he'll have a couple walks, or he'll hang up a few breaking pitches, but, and then you leave out, you know, your propane fastball strikeout guy in Lance Lynn, you know, who's basically kind of one of your underrated horses. And then you got, you know, Michael Wacha has all the wins, and he's been kind of steady over the whole season. Carlos Martinez has the experience in the bullpen, but he's also one of your best starters. John Lackey, in my opinion, has been one of the, I mean, just the unsung heroes of this rotation. He's been one of the, he's been a great veteran presence. He's, I mean, if you just want to go since, you know, the June 8th start, he's been just great. I mean, he's got 15 starts of 7 innings or more, or he's allowed 3 earned runs or less. And it's hard to leave one of these guys off. I mean, you know, I mean, in my rotation today, I left Lance Lynn off, and I've been kind of rethinking it and thinking about it all day. And it's hard to leave Lance Lynn off because, you know, you don't want to, you can't put John Lackey and Jaime Garcia in the bullpen. You just can't. I mean, they've never done it. It's not a role that they're due. They'll kind of be useless down there. You know, Michael Wacha, it was great in the 2013 postseason. He's one of your best starters. I can't see Matheny doing that. You know, Carlos Martinez pitched in it last season in the bullpen. He's been so great this year. Lance Lynn pitched in the bullpen once upon a time a while ago. You know, when he had long hair and a little more wild, a little more of a wild beast, more than a little more so than the tame one the Cardinal fans see today. So it's a very hard decision. And somebody said it best today in a response. They said, you know, there is no bad decision. It's a great problem to have, but it's also kind of maddening. Because if they started today, you know, who do you leave off? It's a tough question.
Well, then Nene throwing the whole idea that Adam Wainwright wants to be back by the end of the year. Even if Wainwright does, it seems like he's much more likely to be a bullpen guy, and that, you know, then you start talking about who do you take out of that spot, but that's a different discussion and probably a moot one. It seems unlikely that they'll put him on the postseason roster, but you know, yeah, right now, I mean, Lynn's kind of your workhorse, the guy that's been there a number of times. Like, he obviously has the experience, and so did Wacha, and Garcia has been so good. I mean, you almost have to put Carlos Martinez in there, which does have the added benefit of saving his arm a little bit. But it gives you the option pretty easily to, you know, if somebody doesn't have it in the first or second inning, you can yank those guys and go ahead and put a Carlos Martinez in there and have him soak up the rest of the, you know, 5-6 innings right after that real quick. So that is a benefit as well. You know, I don't know how they're going to work that out. And thankfully, we still have a few more weeks. And unfortunately, baseball has a way of solving some of those problems.
Yeah.
Hopefully, that won't be the case here.
Answering them for us.
Hopefully, that won't be the case, but we'll see. But it is. It's an interesting situation. When we've got, I mean, it's one of the reasons the Cardinals are carrying 13 pitchers, because they got so many of them. You hate to not use some of them. I mean, you're still looking at, well, you know, we talked about, talking about rosters expanding here in about, well, it'd be a week and a half. And we could have a bullpen of about almost 20 guys, or a pitching staff of about 20 guys, because you talk about the 13 that are here now, and you bring up Sokolovich and Tuilagavala and Harris. Those are the easy, and Tim Cooney probably comes up.
Yeah. And,
you know, there's four right there. You're looking at 17 arms. you know, and I don't know if there's anybody else.
I can't see anybody else. I can't see anybody right off the top of my head.
Well, Marco Gonzalez, does he make the call?
Marco,
up? Do you call him up? If he's healthy, I think they'd probably like to get a chance to see him because I haven't seen him at all this year.
Yeah, I think they'd probably like to.
I don't think, you know, he's not a postseason guy, but he's a guy that may pitch in September. You know, if Walden was able to come back, which I don't think he is. You and I talked about that. I don't think Walden will come back, but or Bilal. I don't think either we'll see either one of them this year, but either one of those comes back. You know, yeah, you're getting close to 20 arms down there, which is great in the idea that you can just kind of rest people and stagger stuff around. But if you're Pittsburgh's chasing you and is only three or four games back, you can't be messing around with too much with the bullpen just because you can't afford to lose any games.
Yeah, and really in September, as we all know, it could still be a 4-game lead, a 5-game lead. You can need all the pitching you need. I mean, if this team keeps on like hitting very mediocre and average and only scoring about 3 or 4 runs a game tops, then you're going to need Marco, you're going to need Cooney, you're going to need Lyons, you're going to need all these guys to come in, you know. And I mean, what if there's like another span of 5 games where there's extra inning games? You need all these different arms. So I think you're going to see a lot of pitchers. I think you're going to see Matheny really deploy a bunch of arms down there, and you're going to see guys that are just filling that bullpen up so much they're going to have to, like, you know, I mean, you know, get some lawn chairs out there or get a couch. I don't know, but I mean, I can see them using a lot more pitchers just because, I mean, this could be a race that goes down to the wire. I mean, the Cardinals have had, I mean, every time they seem to push the Pirates, like last week, they're up 6, maybe 7, and then, you know, the Pirates win it. I mean, they had that great series against the Mets, and they kind of get right back in it, and they played very well against the Dodgers before they got to the Busch Stadium last week. They don't seem to die. I mean, when they lose and the Cardinals win and will gain a game, we'll think, okay, this is the start of us pushing them away. And then the next few games, the Pirates close the gap, and they gain a game somehow. And, you know, the Cardinals are still going to play the Pirates 6 more times. They're going to play the Cubs 6 more times. There's going to be a fight because the Cubs aren't too far off. And, you know, you don't want to see the Cardinals blow this lead that was once 9 games and 10 games, 11 games over the Cubs. And it's gotten down to 2.5 at the All-Star break, and it's stretched back out to 7. And now it's down to 4.5. And it just, I think in September, you're going to need as many guys as you can bring up. And that means bats and Scruggs. If you can find certain guys on the 40, get them on the 40-man, and guys like Jacob Wilson, who seems to have a good bat, maybe can give Colton Wong some rest at second base. Greg Garcia will be here. You know, it's just the kind of guys you just need. I mean, you need as much as you can get, and I think that's going to include a lot of pitching. I think it's going to be a very crowded bullpen in September.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 40-man roster, and there is not a single arm on that, you know, on that roster, on the 40-man, save probably Nick Greenwood, that you would not want up in, and has not been effective this year. Because I think even Mitch Harris, which we saw struggle early in the year, you know, before his last injury issue, came back and was pitching better, and I haven't seen how he's done in Memphis, but
he's done pretty well. I think I checked his day, and I think he's actually pitched very well in Memphis since his last time in the majors, and since his deployment down to the Memphis. I think he's actually been pretty solid.
Yeah, so, I mean, you figure that he's going to get the call back up as well. So, yeah, it's just Nick Greenwood that's probably not going to. Nick's got a 5 ERA in Memphis, so I don't see them giving him a call-up. But, you know, that's just saying something, I think. When you can look at your 40-man and say everybody, pretty much everybody, with an arm can contribute. Now, you get into the hitters, that's a different story. I mean, you know, we'll probably see Greg Garcia, we'll probably see Xavier Scruggs, we'll start to see people like Holiday and Jay, and maybe even Matt Adams, who's gone down to Jupiter to start working out and is optimistic about, you know, assuming no setbacks, it sounds like he'll be back. You know, maybe you're talking about, you know, then you get Grichuk back, you got those four guys. You know, those four bats can make a difference. I mean, those are guys that, can hit for the most part. We'll have to see what John Jay can do after this period of time, and he was struggling beforehand anyway. But that brings a lot more stability to the lineup when you can put, you know, a Holiday in at three and maybe a Matt Adams in at six. You know, of course, you do that, then where does Stephen Piscotty play?
Well, that's where your first base thing kind of comes in, and he's going to start pushing Adams, and you're going to essentially move Reynolds and Moss to the bench unless one of them's lighting up. And I mean, as Mozeliak said on the radio last week, he said it's going to be some tough decisions if you get Holiday back and you get Adams back, and you have to find out, because Piscotty's your best hitter in the last 30. I mean, ever since he's been up in the last 30 days, you know, he's leading the team in average. I mean, and in his last few stretch of games, he's starting to hit for some more power. He's got some pop in that bat, and he seems to be able to hit very well in a two spot. He can move him down to the fifth or sixth or seventh. You can pretty much hit him anywhere. And he hits. He's a very calm guy. He's a very, you know, collected guy. He doesn't have to show a lot of emotion. He did show a little emotion when he scored the other day. He scored the game when he won in the Giants game. But he's just a very talented young kid, and he's showing his stuff, and he's kind of taking over this team in a time of injury and kind of leading them a little bit, kind of quietly. And it's going to be hard to move him out of the lineup. I mean, Holiday's going to have to be out there 100%. You're going to have to see Grichuk at 100%. You're going to... I mean, he's going to make Matheny make some very tough choices. You know, you may see him teach, you know, this guy how to play second base just for the heck of it. I don't know. You may see him put two first basemen out there and say, okay, Adams, you stay on the right. Piscotty, you go to the left. Let's just try it and be kind of crazy. But no, all jokes aside, you know, Piscotty's going to play. I mean, if Piscotty's still hitting, Adams is going to have to really show. I mean, Adams is going to play, but everybody in the outfield is going to have to show something. And that means that people are going to have to show they're either healthy or effective. But I just can't see him putting Piscotty out of this lineup. Unless Piscotty goes on a big slump, maybe so. But he just doesn't seem to be doing it. He seems to be getting better to play. He seems to be getting smarter. He seems to be able to drive the ball a little more. So it's a very tough decision if you happen to get Adams back. Because if Adams comes back, he seems to be the first guy I'll come back, because he's pretty much going down to Florida to get more activities. He's going to come back. I can see him back in early September. And that means he'll push the people at first base. He'll make Reynolds and he'll make Moss. And Moss is not in the outfield by then. Then you have Holiday and Jay. And then the outfield just gets really crowded. And Peter Borges' appearances go down like two times a week, if that. And if Grichuk comes back, then you got Holiday, Jay, Grichuk, and I mean, and you have Hayward, and you have Piscotty. I mean, this is where Mike Matheny will really lament the fact that you cannot play 10 guys in the field like softball. And you can't have four guys out there, because it's going to be very tough, because you have a veteran in Matt Holiday who's going to need the at-bats. If he is 100%, he's going to need the at-bats to get right. And then you got Grichuk, who's going to need to find his swing again, and Memphis is going to be done. You know, John Jay hasn't swung a bat in months in a real game. It's crazy. It's almost like that conundrum is about as crazy as the pitching in the playoffs. In which I think we could solve the pitching in the playoffs by just going with a 5-man rotation. Just to heck with it. Let's defy convention. And you know, maybe just piggyback two guys. Maybe just have, you know, two starters split up a game. I don't know.
And that may be possible. I think the problem with going with anything more than a 4-man rotation in the postseason just gets people off that normal
the rest
routine, you know. And if there's any time you want them on a routine, it would be in the postseason. I'm looking at this 40-man, and I'm wondering who there's three. Back, you know, because the Cardinals are going to call up another catcher. I mean, that's just a guarantee. They always have three catchers in September. Why, we don't know, because Tony Cruz doesn't actually play anyway. But, you know, I guess they're probably going to call up another catcher. They have three catchers on the 40-man roster, which makes it easy to call up one of them. Ed Easley, Cody Stanley, and Mike Ullman. Of course, Stanley and Easley are playing at Memphis. Ullman is still at AA. Who do you call up? Who do you call up if you had the choice?
You know, I would do the unconventional thing, and I would call up Ullman. I mean, I know it would cause him to jump a couple things, but I think he forecasts a little bit more pop than the other two guys, and it'd be a very unlikely move. But I just think that if you want to get something, and if you want to maybe add some, a little bit of something extra behind Yadier Molina, and also give a young kid a chance who's had a very good year at Springfield, give him a little bit of exposure, because we all know. Then it gets down to, you know, you keep Cruz as your emergency catcher, and then this guy can maybe catch a few innings, or he could be a pinch hitting bat. And I know Mike Holman's got some power. I've seen him play live. He's got some pop. He's had a pretty decent year. Once again, he would have. I mean, it would be a jump from Double A. We've seen it before. But I mean, as much as Ed Easley and Cody Stanley, I mean, they're not scrubs by any chance. But if I look at all those three guys, I get most excited by Michael Holman.
Yeah, I mean, since they're all in the 40-man, and it's not one of those things where you have to, you know, add somebody, remove somebody from the 40-man to put him on, I don't see that there's any reason why you don't bring him up. We've seen Easley, we've seen Stanley. We also have seen that they're probably not going to hit. They aren't hitting in Memphis, which is a spot that, you know, you can't expect. If they're not hitting in Memphis, you can't expect them to hit in St. Louis. And like you said, Oldman would have to jump that, but that's not a big deal. I mean, he's not doing anything, but, you know, they could send him back to Memphis next year. I assume that's what they're going to do anyway.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, you know, and who knows? Maybe he comes in, has a strong month, and makes you at least start thinking about using him as the backup next year.
Yeah.
I would do that. I agree with you. I mean, he's had a very strong year at Memphis, at Springfield, and, you know, at least give you some potential, some idea of, you know, more than the same old, same old. Then again, I mean, it's just, you got to do something, and maybe that's the little bit of lightning that you need to have an extra push in September. I don't know, but I think that's what I would do. Probably won't be what Mo does. We'll probably see Ed Easley, which is disappointing. But, you know, and again, the third string catcher is probably not going to get a whole lot of playing time in September anyway. But a guy like Olman, I mean, you know, if you're third catcher, he could be your pinch hitter, and you leave Cruz on the bench as that emergency guy. It would be nice to see. Now, we've talked about a lot of people that could come up in September. One name that is not being talked about tonight by us, but has been talked about in the last week or so, is Alex Reyes, pitching in Springfield. Obviously the top prospect of the Cardinals now that Stephen Piscotty is playing in St. Louis. He's not on the 40-man. You'd have to clear room for him. A lot of different variables there. It does not sound like Mo is anxious to do that. What do you think? Should they bring up Reyes? Should they let him, you know, have the September off and then go play whatever winter ball he's gonna play?
Well, I think Jennifer Legault, she talked to Mo last week, and he said that they're probably not gonna do it. And as much as I want to see Reyes, I think he's got a lightning arm. I just think with all the pitching we just talked about in that 40-man roster, I don't think they see a need to get him up here and start his clock and, you know, maybe mostly have him sit around. I mean, I know last week I said, you know, it'd be great for him to come up here and just kind of hang with the team and get the major league experience, go get, you know, attach yourself at the hip to Adam Wainwright, talk to him and get as much as you can. But I think that they're just going to let him kind of rest. And then that's kind of what Mo said. Lagos kind of, she answered that. I think one of her mailbag sessions, they asked her about Reyes, and Mo said that they're probably just going to shut him down, and they're going to think about fall ball and winter ball. But, you know, he pitched tonight, and here's an amazing stat, people. In just over 96 innings this year, he allowed his first home run tonight on the mound in Springfield. He pitched 5 innings tonight. I think he had 9 strikeouts. He allowed I think 3 earned runs, but he allowed his first home run of the season. That's just an amazing stat. I mean, even in Double A and High A where he was in Peoria before he went to Springfield, that's still an amazing stat to throw for a guy that throws was just hard. And you know, he's got a good off speed pitch, but for a guy to get his first home run on August 20th, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, he's had some health issues. He sat out some, but. Yeah, that's pretty good, especially the fact that, you know, the Texas League tends to be a hitter's league anyway.
Yeah.
So, I think that's the case. It just, there's not any real spot for him. You know, if it was the other way around and we had you know, hitters coming out the out of the woodwork and we needed some pitching.
Yeah.
You know, then maybe you talk about it. And, you know, but, you know, they don't even need a dominant, you know, setup guy because they've got three or four of them. so, I just don't see – and he's only pitched 20 innings. Well, before tonight he had 19 innings in Springfield. So, he's still got some seasoning to do. I mean, this time next year, yeah, we're probably talking about him maybe being that he may already be up by this time next
year. Yeah, he may be here.
But I don't see that there's a logical reason to bring him up to St. Louis this year around. I think that like I said, we got so many people. We've used that 40 man so much, and you know, you've got a couple of guys sitting on the 60-day DL, including Matt Adams, which means that somebody's going to have to come off that 40 man to put him back on it. It's just difficult to go through those logistical hoops and put him on when you really, really don't need to. There was a conversation. I got sucked into UCB radio last night as Matt Whitener was running late, and I filled in for him for a little bit. And we had an interesting conversation that I had not really thought about until Tara asked the question. And the question was, is Mike Matheny manager of the year in the National League? I'll go through my opinion later, but let me, since I've thrown that at you, what do you think?
Well, you know, there's a good column from 101 ESPN writer Brent Doles. He kind of went over to candidates, and you know, he talked about, you know, Collins in New York if they make it, and you know, Clint Hurdle's always going to be there. But you know, I'm not really a big Mike Matheny critic. I mean, you're not going to see me shout him with praise every night. I'm going to probably be pulling my hair out, whatever hair I have left, some nights when Matheny makes certain moves. But I think he's done a great job this year. I mean, I think you can't just keep saying it, oh, it's a great team. No, you got the Cardinals empty in their Memphis farm, and they're maybe thinking about pulling guys from Springfield, and they're dealing with all these injuries, and your team is still the best in the league by 4.5 games in late August. I think a lot of that has to go to the manager. I think Matheny here in his fourth season, I mean, it's just one of those things where you have to tip your cap. I mean, he's constantly, I mean, the Cardinals are great, but and they're great because they have a depth in their organization. But I think, you know, strategic moves, he's gotten a little better this year. I think he's growing as a manager. I think he's using guys better. I think he's sticking with guys a little more. He's always going to have his hang-ups with certain players, but I think a lot of teams have that. I mean, I don't follow other teams hard enough to go if their managers play other guys they shouldn't too much. I only have time to really follow one team. I can't imagine the guys that actually follow two. But I just think what he does as a leader and as a way that he gets these guys to play. And it's one of those things where I think the credit of this team staying together and staying healthy and again, not staying healthy, gosh, that's a crazy statement, but, you know, having so many injuries, and yet they're still strong. And people would just go, no, it's not him, it's just Mozeliak, it's the roster. I think Mozeliak gives the guy a roster, and he has to do what he can with it. And we've seen how weak the bench can be at times. We've seen how much his bullpen's taken hits, and his bullpen's been bent over backwards, and his rotation's been had, you know, 7 or 8, 9 guys in it, and he's lost guys. I mean, he lost his ace in the first month. You've only had Jaime for half the season. I mean, Holiday's been gone, and he's one of your – I mean, he's a guy that's been there. I mean, ever since he's been a Cardinal, he's been there. This might be the most time that he's going to miss in any season he's played with the Cardinals. I mean, he's almost going to come down to missing almost at least close to a half, maybe 40% of the season. But – I think it cannot be denied. I think in the first 3 years you go, okay, he had a great roster. They had good runs. But this season, he has grown as a manager. I mean, I've seen it. I watch every game. I'm not a complete Saberhead. I'm not going to jump into, you know, all the different moves he makes. But the moves that he has made have paid off. And, yes, he still makes mistakes. But I think every manager makes mistakes. I think people forget about that when they objectify Matheny, is that, you know, it's not like they're looking at all 30 – managers in this league. I mean, I think with all the problems that he's had and the pressure he has and the expectations that this franchise has, I think Matheny's come into his own a little bit this year, so I think he is a great candidate for pitcher of the year. It's been too long of a week. But, you know, when it comes to manager of the year, I don't see how he's not a top candidate. I don't see how you can brush him off again this year. I think his work with this team that has been beaten down as much as any team, and the way, I mean, we all know he's a leader. He's been a leader of men since he stepped into this dugout. But I just think he's gotten smarter. He has dealt with the punches a little bit more. He's gotten strategically better. I think the in-game management is still a little rough around the edges, but we all understand. I mean, and I'll say it, you know, it's like when you have a kid and you say, oh, come on, honey, he's only 3 years old. Well, this is Mike Matheny's fourth year as a manager. So he's, I mean, we can look back in any great manager's career and how they were in their fourth year. Maybe they weren't completely perfect yet, and they're still honing their game. And I do think that he's surrounded by a great talent and a great set of a great front office, and he's got a lot of talent in this team, but he's had to work hard this year in putting a team on the field that can play and putting a team on the field that's consistently won. And I think he does deserve to be in that conversation for manager of the year. I don't think it could be denied anymore.
There are typically three criteria or three types of managers that win manager of the year. You've got the one that had the best record, the one that dealt with the most injuries successfully, and the one that was that led a surprise team. You know, Mike Matheny gets two out of three. You know, I guess really when you look at and you look at this, and there's not any, save the Mets, there's no surprise team in the National League. There's not a team that's playing, you know, way above what you expected them to be, except for, and even the Mets were kind of expected to be better. They weren't expected to win, so maybe Terry Collins will get some votes there.
I think the Cubs, what they're doing is a little surprising, but then Joe Madden kind of puts that theory to rest.
When people were picking the Cubs to win the World Series this year,
gosh,
you know, and there was magazines and things that did that. I think Sporting News picked them to win the one. I think they are a little bit surprising, not much. I think most people expected them to be pretty competitive for a wild card spot. Now, you know, they're better. They're a little bit better than they were. And yes, Joe Madden will get some votes as well. I think Terry Collins will get some votes out of New York. But you know, you look around, you know, Clint Hurdle will get some, obviously. I don't know how many Don Mattingly gets, because that roster is so, should be so stacked, and they're struggling to stay ahead of San Francisco. You know, which means, of course, Bruce Bochy may get some votes as well. But yeah, I think when you look at it all the way around, I think that Matheny has the strongest case for it. And again, like you say, we watch him every night. We see the flaws more than the national media do. But, you know, I'm follow a whole bunch of different people on Twitter that are focused on their fandom. And I see a lot of people complaining about just about everything. You know, Terry Collins has a lot of detractors. Matt Williams in Washington has a lot of detractors. You know, Don Mattingly gets ripped for a lot of the same things we rip Mike Matheny for or has in the past. So, you know, everybody's got, like you say, everybody's got flaws. Everybody's got their issues. And we see them more, you know, we're a little bit closer to the picture. We see the flaws. People, the rest of this, you know, baseball kind of steps back and sees the overall picture and sees how good this season has been. And like I said, I think he's grown as a manager as well. We don't see as many bunts. We don't see him relying quite as much on the same people. So yeah, I think it's going to be really weird if he wins it. It's going to seem strange. It's not like when Tony La Russa won it. That's probably the best choice.
I mean, I just think, I mean, even when Tony La Russa was manager, even he made me, you know, go crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was just the way his bullpen management and what he did and just all the little mind in games within the games within the games that he played with in those seasons that he drove me nuts. But you look at him as a whole, hey, the guy was a great manager. I mean, he was a, you know, a strategist and a guy who just could outthink managers. You know, Matheny, like I said, he's growing. I mean, from his first year in 2012 to his fourth year now, he has grown. And I think he's, like, the way he stuck with Carlos Martinez last week and that the Pittsburgh game. He sent him back out there for the eighth inning because he believed in him. He thought that he can get. I mean, that's showing some trust. That's maybe something a rookie manager wouldn't do. They'd be too scared to do. Or a young manager who's maybe thinking a little bit too much. He's stuck with guys that he may not have stuck with. Like Sammy Tuivasa, when he came up here in that series right before the All-Star break, he pitched. I mean, he pitched in some big games. He's relying on younger guys. He's relying on his veterans. He's mixing and matching very well. I mean, hey, for everybody that complains about the lineups, I mean, his lineups lately have been strong. I mean, he's putting out there what he gets, and he's doing what he can. And even for the people that think Borges should be playing more, well, you know, if you look at Borges' stats, you can't make a big case for that. I mean, if that's going to be your flaw about, you know, not playing him, that's kind of a minor quip. That's kind of just a decision. And I think on the whole, I think he has grown better. I mean, and I'll take your word for it, and I believe it, that other fan bases will just rip their managers because they expect, especially these big fan bases, are the teams that are expected to win, like the Nationals, like the Dodgers, and the Pirates, and the Giants, teams that have won and they're expected to win. Their managers are going to get hit hard no matter what. They could be the most perfect guy. They could be the smartest guy. They could be a veteran or a young guy. It's going to happen. That's the way baseball is. Baseball's not like football where it's once a week and you can rest for 6 days. You know, baseball is every day and you're constantly judging and overanalyzing and overthinking everything. And, you know, when you see that with every fan base, it makes you go back to Matheny and go, maybe we are a little bit too hard on. Maybe we were not recognizing how good of a job he's done with these teams, where these teams that all of a sudden they don't hit. And like last year's team, this year they've gotten hit with injuries. They've gotten hit with, I mean, every part of their lineup's gotten hit hard. Matt Adams has been out. You've lost your stability in Matt Holliday. Matt Carpenter went missing for 2 months. And yet this team, he pushes, he plugs, he puts this guy here and there, and he makes it work. I mean, when Matt Carpenter needed to go to second base, he didn't hesitate. He moved him over there. He'll shift Mark Reynolds to third. He'll put Moss in left. He gives guys a shot. I mean, for all the detractors that think that he just, you know, and there's people on Twitter that I follow that just get quite vulgar at this guy during games, and I just go, you know, was that really called far? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have to step back and go, I just don't think a lot of that hate is warranted anymore. I think he's made a lot more sound judgment, and he hasn't relied on certain things that he has relied on in the past. And I think he's improved. And I think he's improved to the point where, yeah, you look around the league, and for manager of the year, who really can steal from him? I mean, Terry Collins at the Mets can make it, yes, but are they, what they did, really more impressive than what the Cardinals do? If the Cardinals have won so many, I mean, the Cardinals are battling off two of the best teams in the league. And if the Cardinals can outlast the Pirates and the Cubs with all the injuries, I think they should just hand Matheny the award without even looking at anybody else, because it just, he's dealing with, in the best division, with the most injuries. And that has to say something, that what the job he's done.
Yeah, I think so. Of course, if the Pirates pass him, then it'll probably be hurdle.
It will be.
He definitely going to get some serious consideration, more than he has in the last 3 years, even though I think he should have gotten some in the last few years, just because the Cardinals have dealt with some injuries and issues as well in the last few years and been very successful. So, before we get to our Twitter questions, because we do have a couple, look at it. This, I was reading this article here on Post-Dispatch, and it was one of the people asked, you know, we saw the Giants pinch hit Madison Bumgarner twice in this series. Once that led to a run because his base hit wound up scoring a run. Second time, not as effective for Mr. Bumgarner, struck out against Rosenthal. But the question was imposed to Mike Matheny, hey, if you have to use one of your pitchers, you know, would you use one of your pitchers to pinch hit, and if so, who? And Matheny pretty much laughed it off, said that he just liked to borrow Bumgarner, which, yeah, that'd be nice. Wouldn't mind having Bumgarner on our team, even with as much good pitching as we have. Maybe he could play first base.
Maybe.
But he said, you know, hey, maybe Lance Lynn. But he said he probably wouldn't use any pitcher like that. It seems to me that with four men on the bench, one of which, you know, depending on, you know, if Hayward's healthy, okay. But then you've got Tony Cruz, who you're not likely to use, and a couple of guys like Borges and Cosma, you really ought to be thinking about using some of these pitchers as a hitter. Not that any of them are lighting it up. I mean, Adam Wainwright would probably be the best one of the bunch, and he's not obviously available. But it seems to me Matheny's missing a trick if he doesn't at least start considering that.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's live in a world where Waino's not hurt. And if he's not starting, I mean, I think, you know, he's your go-to guy. I mean, because he can swing the bat. But I also think about a guy like Jaime Garcia who can swing the bat really well, but then he tends to hurt himself when he runs the bases. But, you know, Waka swings the bat a little good. Carlos Martinez takes a mighty hack. I always worry that he's going to have a Carlos Gomez or a Henry Ramirez. His head's going to go flying off when he swings. But, yeah, I mean, I think you have – I mean, if you have a bench like he's had some of these nights, you have to use one of your pitchers. I mean, if you're going to let your guys pinch run, I mean, I think they can at least go to the plate first and try to get on base themselves. I mean, if the Giants – I mean, Bruce Boch is definitely not trying to disrespect his players, but he's playing with a short bench. And, you know, if Madison Bumgarner can give you a big hit, if he can hit it out, you know, why not? I mean, I'm not saying that one of the Cardinals guys can do that without Wainwright. They don't really have a home run threat. But, you know, I've seen Lance Lynn get some hits. I've seen John Lackey get some hits. I mean, if he's out there – I bet you he can go up there and put a good bat together. And, you know, I mean, it might be better than a strikeout, which is what at one time with, you know, a third year lineup might do. So, I mean, in my case, I'm kind of far. And if he's not far, then I think that's just that's thinking a little that could be one of those things where I think he needs to, you know, kind of rethink. I mean, if you got guys in the bench who are kind of sitting around, I mean, yeah, you don't want to put one of your pitchers out there who can get in harm's way, but you know what? If you got to get a hit, and if your bench is pretty weak, and if you're willing to pinch run Carlos Martinez on the bases, I think you should be willing to put him at the plate, and that means you should put any of your incumbent starters at the plate and see if they can get a hit. Because this year, I mean, I've seen all of them get hits, so they all have the opportunity to do it. And, you know, opposing pitchers might just try to, you know, sometimes you'll see opposing pitchers just try to put a lot of nasty pitches. But sometimes even the Cardinal guys who give up hits to their pitchers, they'll try to group a fastball. And guys like Lackey and Lynn will do something with it, and they'll crank it in the outfield. But so I'm the guy that thinks that he should think about putting his starting pitchers out there because it can't hurt.
Yeah, give him a shout-out to Tyler Lyons. You know, 3 for 12 this year.
Hey.
Scored 3 runs, so, you know, maybe worth something. I mean,
and also Tyler – you know, there's games where he might not work even. So why not bring him down there and, you know, let him get out there and crank one?
You mean like most games. I mean, he's pitched twice since he's been called up. Yeah. And I mean, granted, that one game was huge. I mean, the game behind Lynn, but then he threw an inning, I guess, in the second game of the Giants series. And pitched a scoreless inning there. But it does seem a little bit over. You know, this is a guy that was pitching well at Memphis. And as much as I know he likes riding the buses, riding the planes and stuff instead of the buses and being in the major leagues, it would be nice to see.
He knows that route really well.
It'd be nice to see him used a little bit more if you're going to sacrifice a bat for that. But that's my soapbox. So,
yeah. That's a perfect conversation. Like, okay, if you don't really want to use one of your guys, why don't you put Lyons up there who's gotten some hits?
Yeah.
It can't hurt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, given the way the offense is, nothing could hurt. Okay. First Twitter question. Let me see if I could find it. I think the first Twitter question was about whether Matt Adams would be a Cardinal in 2016. And you kind of got into this on Twitter. But you're of the opinion he's going to be back.
Yeah. I mean, I think as much. I mean, look, if he comes back and he lights it up and Mozeliak has the chance to make a big trade, I think there's a small chance. I just keep thinking he's going to be back because, as Dennis Larson pointed out, he got 3 years of arbitration eligibility. He's still got some control, and the Cardinals seem to have kind of believed that he can play first base and play it really well, and he has. And at the very least, he could be a platoon guy with Steven Piscotty next year. They can kind of fight for bats. You might see him fight for bats here in September. But I just think as much as – you know, he could come back and he could really raise his trade profile and hit really well. And as I said, if there's a big blockbuster trade or a big guy that Mozeliak all of a sudden gets a call about, and, you know, I don't know who that would be and what they would want to offer. But, you know, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that he's It's not a 100% chance he's here next year, but I think with a guy like Adams, I think it's close to 85% at least, just because of what the Cardinals have kind of held on to him for and what they believe he could do. And they, you know, the injury this year kind of cut short his third full season. So I think you want to, I think it's a pretty much a finality that he's going to be here next year. Now, will he be here the whole year next year? That's a great question. I mean, he could hit very well. And if the outfield's crowded and Biscotti's playing really well and he's expendable and he's having one of those seasons where he's not really stepping out and demanding more playing time, but he got value, Bo might deal him then. Maybe because of how good Biscotti is, and if he's bringing Hayward back and Grichik's in center and you got Holiday and Jay back, maybe you think about it in the offseason. I can't see a scenario where he really gets traded, because I know Bo likes that control.
Well, and I'm kind of with you. Yeah, obviously the only way he's not a Cardinal is if he gets traded. But if he has a strong September and raises his trade value, the Cardinals want to keep him because they have nobody else that can really play first. Unless, you know, I don't think they want Stephen Piscotty to play there all the time when they have Matt Adams. And if they don't sign Hayward, you know, Piscotty's going to play outfield anyway, although I think they'll sign Hayward. So if he plays badly enough that the Cardinals would like to move him, nobody's going to want him. So yeah, I guess it's a possibility that somebody would trade on potential. But given, you know, that there's really no options behind him, you know, besides Piscotty. I mean, you've got Brandon Moss, but you know, we've talked about that. you know, I'm pretty sure Mark Reynolds was just a 1-year deal.
Yeah, I can't see him coming back. And I do think that with the way you said, there's no really true great talent. I mean, great first base talent behind them. I mean, not unless you bring up Jonathan Rodriguez and just the heck with it, man. Just bring up the guy that does the splits. There aren't a lot of scenarios where I can see Adams back, not here next year.
No, I agree with that one. All right. I'm trying to, there was a question here and I'm trying to understand it. Talking about reading the question, I guess if they thought, it says if Holiday gets hurt and is out and would be an injury risk, then I don't understand.
Yeah, I kind of saw that one and I was like, I didn't really see what he was kind of getting at with that.
Unless maybe he's
next
talking,
year, maybe.
I think you're with before that is somebody was talking about maybe who's going to be traded out of the outfield or who's going to play first base. Maybe I guess what he's saying is if Holiday's hurt next year and you've got Piscotty out there, you know, are you platooning Adams? Are you playing him every day? Which I think then you're probably playing him. Well, you know, I don't know. I think we're talking about who's going to be here next year for first base. I think Brandon Moss will be here, and we'll have Matt Adams, and then you might have Piscotty being able to play that too, well, depending on the Hayward situation. And I think Adams is going to platoon with some of those guys. If Holiday's hurt, I think that just all that does is puts Piscotty out there in the outfield and has Adams and Moss splitting the time at first. That's what I'm seeing there. Now, you know, out of the outfielders, we've got a slew of outfielders, and you're talking about Jay and you're talking about Borges in the, you know, and you've got Piscotty and you've got Holiday and you've got Hayward, and you got Grichik. You know, you figure probably four of those guys coming back. Two of them probably can't, even though there's not any real push from Memphis to get another guy in there. You know, who's not here next year out of those outfielders?
You know, I almost got to think Peter Borges is the first guy I think of who's not here, just because I think out of him and John Jay, I think the Cardinals will find more use, and I guess with Matheny trust in John Jay, and that John Jay can function as a fourth or fifth outfielder on a team. He's done it before and he's done it really well. And so I think if he's healthy, he's going to be back here next year. Borges is a guy that I can see easily getting kind of cut off. And really the big picture that even connects to first base is Jason Hayward. I mean, if he doesn't come back, then Piscotty easily goes to right field and Matt Adams goes to first base with Moss, and those two guys kind of fight it out. But so really the big kind of humdinger is Mr. Hayward. If he comes back or not, because if he doesn't, then, you know, you got Grichuk and Biscotti and Holiday. And if Holiday gets hurt, and if Hayward's there, you move Biscotti to left, or maybe you move Grichuk to left and you put John Jay in center field. I think if there's one guy that I can think that I think the Cardinals will finally just kind of cut loose and maybe give him a chance elsewhere, because they have these young guys that can play good defensive out there in the outfield. Maybe not as good as Borges, but they're good defensive outfielders and they get good speed. Like Tommy Pham could still be in the Cardinals organization next year. You could have, Piscotty's a good outfielder. Grichuk's a good outfielder. So you don't really – the need for a guy like a defensive specialist like Borges is kind of starting to decrease.
Yeah, I think that we've argued, and everybody seems to argue, that he needs to play every day to hit.
Yeah.
And he's just not going to do that here. So it probably would be best. He'll probably be gone. John Jay, boy, I can't imagine them letting him go just because – of what he's done with this organization and how loyal these people typically are. But again, if you're signing Hayward, there's not a real good spot to put him in. He's obviously not going to be the starting center fielder. I think that Grichuk probably has that pretty much lined up. But they do probably need somebody that can play center on a semi-regular basis, so maybe Jay sticks around because of that, and maybe that's your five outfielders. I don't know. I mean, you could do worse than having a guy like John Jay on your bench. There's no, don't get me wrong. If he can keep his hitting streak, I mean, his stroke going, I mean, he's not a guy that's going to do you power, but, you know, he's a guy that could get on and hit a double or something like that and do more than what we've seen out of the bench right now.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of bandy. I mean, the guy isn't going to bark if he doesn't get to play a lot. I mean, he's pretty much a guy who's been a fourth or fifth guy before, and he's functioned very well at that job. I think in 2011, he was really good. Just kind of being that anything guy, being the guy who comes off the bench for pinch hitting. He can come off and play any position. If Grichuk needs a day off, you know, John Jay can play center field. He gives you a little bit something different. He's kind of a Matheny's anything guy. You know, he's a guy that can pretty much do anything, and he's flexible. Unlike Borges, he doesn't seem to, if he's healthy, he doesn't seem to decay if he's on the bench. And it's one of those guys that the Cardinals can just, they really seem to like those kind of guys. And I mean, I'm getting to think if another injury happened in this outfield, I think he put Cosma out there right now before he put Borges. I mean, there's just something that tells me there's a good chance that happened. But as far as next year, I do see that the Cardinals can find a use for Jay. I think that he's just a versatile guy when he's healthy. I mean, this is all competing because, you know, we saw what happened to Peter Borges after he hurt his wrist. He broke his wrist. He was never the same. John Jay had surgery on that. He hasn't been the same all year. He seems to be getting stronger as far as his swings in the last couple weeks and practice drills. So hopefully he gets that strength back, because when he's healthy, I mean, people who get down on John Jay forget what he can do when he's healthy. He's an on-base machine. The guy's a .289 career hitter. He's got a .356 on base. We saw what he did in the playoffs last year. I mean, he's a very strong player who doesn't really have to play every day. He's kind of a versatile threat. So I think he's here next year, and I think Peter Borges is not.
One of our other Twitter questions was to talk about off-season moves and roster turnover and stuff like that. And I don't really want to dive into that too much because – we'll get to that, you know, kind of in the end of the year and off season and stuff.
Farther
like that.
Away.
Yeah, I mean, if you're up 10 or 15 games, maybe we could talk about it now, but it's still a little tight. But, you know, I just did kind of look at the, you know, Matt, MLB Trade Rumors has a list of free agents for this coming off season. The problem with the Cardinals going after a free agent is, you know, most everybody that's here is going to be a starter. We've talked about the outfield.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Carpenter at third, Peralta at short, Wong at second. You know, the only, you know, probably Adams at first, you know, Molina behind the plate. Your starting rotation's full with more than enough people. Your bullpen's pretty full.
I mean, your backup catcher really is, and you know, is the only thing you're really looking for. And that's not really a very popular position for a free agent. I know, let me go and sit behind Yachty for about 145 games.
Yeah, and there's not any obvious choices there, maybe Deion and Navarro, but which it wouldn't hurt to have a backup catcher that could do a little bit more in the hitting department. The only other thing the Cardinals might think about, which they probably won't given the discussions, but I mean, you could see them going after a first baseman, you know, like a Chris Davis, because that's probably about the best one out there. We had one in Cardinalcion. He's a free agent. He's got a $10 million club option. They're going to pick that up. So, you know,
Chris Justin Morneau, but he kind of has a concussion problem.
Yeah, and I'm kind of iffy there.
Gabby Sanchez, maybe, but no, maybe not.
Yeah, so, you know, Chris Davis is about the only guy that they might consider, but then you have to, then you have the issue of, you know, do you trade Matt Adams then, you know, and what can you get for him and stuff like that. It seems like, as we know what Mo likes to do, it seems unlikely that he would get rid of a guy that's young like that and has control, yeah.
You know, something that Ben Chambers mentioned, and I'm not sure, where is Evan Gattis playing these days?
Houston, I believe.
Yeah, you know, he was one of those. He brought up last year about, you know, who can play first with Adams, who can catch behind Molina. He's one of those guys that I think about, but I'm pretty sure I don't see him leaving Houston. But he's one of those guys I always kind of think about when I see about first base catchers, swingmen kind of guys.
Yeah, the problem is, if I'm going to pull him up real quick, but I'm pretty sure he's pretty much a starter. I mean, yeah, he's played in 114 games. You know, he's got 18 homers, 90. That's walks. He has 18 homers, 62 RBI. He's only hitting 238. But, I mean, he's a guy that's probably going to be starting. And he's a free agent, but he's arbitrary and eligible. So he's not even a free agent until 2019 because he's arbitrable. So unless they non-tendered him.
Just like Adams, man. So they both got like 2 or 3 years of control.
Yeah. So that's not likely, like you say. That it doesn't seem that Houston would go and non-tender him. Then again, you know, Atlanta did trade him, so you never know. It does seem like whatever Mo does to this team, he's going to have to go the trade route, because getting anybody in here that's going to make any kind of impact, a guy that's more than a guy off the bench, more than the Mark Reynolds.
You have to send somebody out.
You got to send somebody out, because there's just every position is taken right now. With people that are not easy to replace. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about that as time goes on.
We're celebrating our 12th World Series.
Yeah, hopefully so. Hopefully after.
Polishing off our rings. Okay, yeah, now let's get into that discussion.
Now we talk about how to defend it. So
that great World Series run where Jaime Garcia was unbreakable anyway. You know, it's so crazy to think about that. And, I mean, that time's coming up. Can we believe that? It's our next show is going to be like right at the end of August. I mean, it's just that we're into the final month and then you're kind of getting into that frenzied playoff time where anything can happen. When we saw the Cardinals shock teams, you know, will the Cardinals be in the best team this year? Will they be shocked? You know, it kind of, and that's why everybody around me here, even in Arkansas, people go, your Cardinals are doing kind of good. I'm like, yeah, it makes me nervous though, because they're kind of like the Kings right now. And if you watch Game of Thrones on HBO, everybody wants to kill the king, okay? I mean, it's not, you know, it's one of those places where maybe those years where we were kind of like the sneaky attack team and we kind of just came up and slapped teams around at the last minute, that was kind of a great thing. But the Cardinals are kind of like the Titan right now. And that's why I just get nervous and I try to think, okay, months down the road, what are we going to be thinking about this team after all this discussion about best pitching and best – it's nerve-wracking, and that's why I don't do it that often.
Yeah. I mean, I would like – I'd feel so much more confident about this team if they could put up 4 runs or so every night on a regular basis. You know, when you get into postseason and you're just pretty much relying on your pitching to be awesome, you know, all it takes is one bad pitch.
It's like that pitch that, you know, that Seth Maness threw to Johnny Gomes. I mean, it just he plants it, and all of a sudden the game is just over, or your pitcher throws the ball away in the outfield and this, you know, big inning. It's just when you start putting your pressure on your – that's what you hope when we get these guys back, our offense can just take off. And then Matheny knows what his playoff roster needs to be. He's got – if Adams can come back and click and Holiday, if Jay can just be a resemblance of himself, this team could really turn into a – I mean, they can catch fire late again.
Would be nice. All right, Cardinals go out on the West Coast. They have three with the Padres. Then they have what, three with Arizona.
Is it the Giants or is it?
And then they got the Giants. Right. Then they've got four with the Giants. This schedule. All right, yeah, four. They got four with Arizona. I knew they had four with somebody. Three with the Padres. Four with Arizona. Three with the Giants, and then they come home for Washington. But you know, it's a trip against the teams. You know, the Padres and the Diamondbacks are struggling. We know that the Giants, we just took two out of three. They're offensively struggling. Their pitching and stuff is still pretty good. In that same period of time, Pittsburgh plays the Giants at home. They beat the Giants tonight. They do get Bumgarner tomorrow night, which is going to be kind of interesting. Then they go on the road for four against the Marlins, and then they have three with the Rockies. You know, they're not – that schedule is pretty easy for the Buccos, especially since they've been able to beat on just about everybody anyway. The Cardinals can't afford to lose too many on this West Coast trip.
They can't. And the Diamondbacks have been playing a little bit better. I mean, they gave the Pirates a little bit of a run for their money, but you know, you have a lot of these teams that are out of it. They're just kind of waiting to sneak up and knock down teams that are trying to run towards the playoffs. You get the Padres and playing in Petco Park, where you know they don't seem to score too many runs. They usually get some good pitching. Then you go into Arizona, and then you got, you know, the Giants always play as tough in San Francisco. So you catch the Nationals team, which, you know, they aren't playing that well right now, but they can always be a tough sell, you know, with the way they're superstars out there. But you know, I mean, it just comes down to just taking care of teams, winning series. Is, you know, you don't need sweeps. You just need to keep winning, and you just need to hope that other teams can give the Pirates a little bit of a pain. And I mean, the Cardinals can go off on a streak where they win like 6 or 7, and the Pirates lose a series, and you know, there could be a 5 or 6, 7 game lead. And they just need to keep winning. And you know, as much as that deficit's down to 4.5, and that's a very nervous thing to be. With, you know, but you just got to hope that Bumgarner can do his job tomorrow night and the Cardinals can take care of these lesser teams. I mean, you're going to have some tough games down the stretch. I mean, you're going to face, you know, tenacious teams like the Giants, and you're going to face the Pirates, and you're going to face the Cubs again. You're also going to face a lot of teams that are just below 500 and they're not good. And, you know, they're teams that your pitching should just carve up. And it just comes down to the one thing we worry about is can we hit? Is there going to be a lot of games in this road trip where the Cardinals don't score for 6 innings, and all of a sudden they score one, and then you're hoping, you know, it's a 1-0 lead into the top of the eighth or the bottom of the eighth, bottom of the ninth, and you're just hinging on your pitching, not making a mistake, and that's just, you don't want to see that. You like to see the bats kind of break out in this road trip.
Yeah, make us feel a lot better, but Cardinals do have a tendency to play to the level of the competition as well, so yeah. That's a scary thing. All right. We've done, we're getting close to an hour and a half here. Dan, I know you were talking beforehand. There's not a whole lot out the theater, but you got anything for this week?
Well, you know that there's a little bit of everything for people who just want to go out there and try. You have American Ultra, which is with Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart. They play like these kind of special agents in hiding. They look like regular people, but they're really government agents, and they're kind of, they go on the run, and you know, it looks like one of those kind of action comedies that may be funny, but it's also one of those movies that just looks like it could be really bad. And then you have, for the video game people, you have the Agent 47, you know, the very popular Hitman game, and it just looks like one of those movies that just was kind of made for, you know, on a very low budget with not-so-good directors and writers, and it's a lot of what came out this week looks like it could be saved for DVD. And there's a lot of those weeks as we transition from the summer season into the heavyweight Oscar season, and you start seeing movies like Johnny Depp's Black Mass, where he plays Whitey Bulger. You see Matt Damon in The Martian. But if you really want to, you know, see something in theaters, I have to recommend movies like The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was Guy Ritchie's little spy flick with Henry Cavill, who people know as Superman. It's a pretty slick little movie that didn't make you think too much. It's a perfect action movie for the summer. Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible 5 is still out there. That's probably my top pick of anything in theaters right now. But as far as the new films, you have Sinister 2. I'm not much of a horror guy, so the first one was really popular. It's just basically you go in the theater, you're supposed to get scared. That's all I know about it. There's some demons involved, maybe. But, you know, it's late August, and this is where you kind of see that kind of weak entries in the theaters, movies that studios didn't really know what to do in the summer with, and they didn't want to put it out in the fall because the heavyweight contenders kind of start to come off of the Oscars. So it's kind of like a semi-January period where you have a lot of movies that are just kind of dumped on audiences. And this weekend's releases aren't that great, but that's where you realize movies like Mission Impossible 5 and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which have been out for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people, I noticed, you know, I read a blog called IO9, it's all science fiction stuff. They had a fall preview for movies earlier in the week, and that ran it all the way out to December. Some little small movie coming out then. Something about Star and Wars, I think. But then you also, I mean, I know you do a little bit on the TV side too. Fall TV is coming out here. We're looking about a month or so until the networks start releasing the new seasons of those shows. And so there's a lot of things that will be interesting to watch there as well.
Yes. I mean, you got NBC's got Heroes. They're trying to relaunch that a little bit. You're going to have a lot of dramas. You're going to have I know there's a show, a Cinemax show called Strike Back, but it just ended, and you have both the stars of those film of that series. They have their own network shows. So, you have a lot of show. I know Wesley Snipes has a TV show coming out. I predict that's going to get about 10 episodes before it gets canceled because people, when it comes to watching these shows on NBC and Fox, they don't get a big leash. And that's kind of why I usually don't dip too far into them. It's just because, you know, they don't get a chance to really tell their story, and they hinge on ratings. And but yeah, as we all know, there's a lot of new shows coming out, and it all starts in September. And usually I'd say about 40% of them usually kind of stick around at least for a season. So I'll be curious to see what comes out and what's good.
Yeah, we should ask our Twitter and our listeners to tell us if there's a show they want us to discuss when it comes out and about, if either one of us are actually watching it.
That's right.
We will do that. I tend to lean more toward, you know, I'm looking forward to Flash and Arrow coming back. And
Yes.
You know, Elementary, it'll be November. Supergirl should be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot of those shows to watch, and there seems to be a lot of them nowadays, but I know you've got a wide variety of things as well. So tweet at us, email us, you know, whatever you think. See if there's a show you'd like us to at least reference every once in a while. Once the fall season comes, we got, you know, a month here. We'll talk about, try to remind you here, there, and everywhere. But just drop us a note, either one of us on Twitter or to the show's account as well, and we'll see what we can do. Dan, appreciate you joining again tonight. And
good time.
We'll hopefully to be able to talk about a whole lot of wins when we get together next week.
All right. I look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is Best Dan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.